the incredible Pink there with Trustful. I have to tell you guys, the studio is literally being held together by sellotape. I can even, can you hear that? There you go. That's the sellotape with a bit of paper on. Hopefully we will stay on air. Okay, so let's try and start that again. Every Thursday on the afternoon show, we take the opportunity to pause and look back at the news of the week so far. This week, I'm joined by Arj Tiruchelvam. He's the head coach at Performance Physique, and he's brought along some of the stories that have particularly caught his eye this week. Arj, hello.
Good afternoon, Carrie. Thanks for having us
in. Oh my God, we can hear you. I'm so pleased. I looked across like, are we going to hear him? So Arj, you look super, super fit.
It's all very deceiving.
Before we get into stories, so tell me what you're as head coach. What does that mean?
I basically work with different sportsmen and men and women from a kind of wide plethora of different activities, swimmers, runners, all of that kind of thing. And I help them with their performance, whether it's nutrition, whether it's coaching, whether it's trying to give them the edge over maybe academy teammates or get themselves a new contract for the next season. I basically try to help people improve themselves, whether they're novices right through to elite athletes.
And have you seen lots of changes over the years in how people's, like in terms of professional sport, particularly towards nutrition and all of those areas?
Yeah, loads. Particularly in football, actually. Football was always stuck in the past. It was very much, we did it like this, we'll always do it like this. And then when Man City had their new owners, they built a sports science kind of complex. And from that point onwards, the rest of the kind of footballing industry is slowly, and I mean very slowly, we still see
like
people
doing... Like the last bastion.
It's there's some crazy stuff which still happens, but it's getting there. It really is getting there.
So tell me, what has particularly caught your attention this week? I'm really interested in your Threads one, so can we start there? Yeah.
Are you on Threads, first of all?
No, but I'm hearing about it, so I feel like I'm going to be educated.
Yes. Well, it's quite exciting, actually. I mean, most people are probably thinking, why is this sports guy talking about Threads? But I...
Tell us the story.
I couldn't sleep the other night. Mm. It was Wednesday night going into Thursday. Couldn't sleep at all. Early hours of the morning. And then suddenly it pops up on my news app saying that Threads has been launched, surprisingly, by Zuckerberg. And basically, it is the competitor for Twitter.
Oh.
Yeah. And they appear to have done a pretty good job considering that they launched this way ahead of time without an official opening. It's not even out in Europe as far as I'm aware.
So it's already surpassed 100 million users.
The fastest growing app in history.
What?
2 million users within the first hour. It is unbelievable, the growth.
So how does, can you explain how it works?
Yeah, it's like a really old school message board. You know, when you had your your dial-up internet and everything. And
But isn't that the same as all the other?
It's, you know,
platforms?
What? There's less kind of numerous irrelevant features on there. It's very straightforward. You write your post or you comment on someone else's post and that's it. There's no direct messaging. There's nothing like that.
Okay. So I'm thinking about Twitter. This is just my opinion. Especially recently, it's just people arguing. Mm. And it feels toxic to read, particularly if you read what you're following, that's kind of one thing. But if you're reading what's suggested for you, it's frightening. So what has Threads got to offer that is better than that? Or has it already started off with a big bun fight?
Well, no, I think this is their USP. I think they've identified the hostility that occurs on Twitter.
Yes.
And they've tried to make it just basically a fun playground. And it has started that way. It is literally only 7 days in today.
Yep.
So whether it lasts, I don't know. But so far, there's no kind of algorithms kind of directing you what you need to look at. Instead, it's just people that you've been interested in and topics that you've been interested in. And it's been quite pleasant, surprisingly.
So you've signed up for it?
Within hours.
And you have followers and people you follow. So
I don't have many followers, but
but it's done in, no, none of us do to begin with. But it's done in that way, is it?
Yeah. So you don't just see your followers. You see perhaps things that, because it's owned by the people that own Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah.
It picks out those people that you follow on those other accounts.
I see.
And it's encouraged you to look at those. But there's no random kind of topics that I haven't been interested in. It's been really, really obvious when I've been looking at something and then go back to the app and now all of the conversations are pretty much about that topic.
It's got algorithms that are weaving all of them together. 100%. That really irritates me because it really it just assumes that you're only interested in one thing. And like, you know, what happened to our kind of diversity and the way that we, you might be interested in sport, but you also might be interested in tennis,
yes,
which is also sport, of course. But yeah, talk to me about Djokovic. You wanted to mention the unbeaten on Wimbledon.
Yes, 10 years. Yeah. 10 years of unbeaten on set of court.
How's that even?
I don't know.
Tell me what's behind that. There must be a psychology behind that, right?
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned that. So the article which came out this week was about Djokovic and his unparalleled success at Wimbledon. And basically, they're trying to understand what components make him, in their view, the greatest athlete of all time, which I would caveat straight away and say that's not true. You know, it is not possible really to say one person is the greatest athlete of all time.
Why not?
Because there are too many different elements of fitness which lead to that. Does he possess perhaps the greatest skill set in tennis right now? I think so. And I think he's going to be upset by someone else on Sunday. That's the day of the final.
Do you?
Alcaraz.
That's what you're predicting. He's going to lose.
The 20-year-old Alcaraz from Spain. I think he's going to be pushing Djokovic. But so far this tournament, Djokovic has lived up to his name. And it's basically down to what they believe is a harder start to his career, facing Federer and Nadal again and again and again and always coming third. And his ability to develop resilience, possibly a trait that nowadays we are lacking quite often. Yeah. He has developed a sequence of almost a mental toolkit to be able to overpower his opponents over long durations. We're great over 2 hours, but it gets over 2 hours, our concentration starts to wane.
Okay.
He seems to be the successor in that battle, basically.
So our concentration going, I think that changes with age as well, right? So are we seeing any kind of decline in him?
Apparently not so. I don't know if you've seen much of Wimbledon this year. He has maybe had one set where he hasn't dominated, basically.
Wow.
He is the first to the ball. He is winning everything.
What does that do for the morale? You're talking about the fact that he had to fight and grow that resilience. Mm. But all the other younger tennis players are not having... I mean, they are. They're just completely beaten, though, aren't they? I mean,
yeah. It is quite strange. Yeah, it is strange that. I often think that with some of my younger athletes that I work with, you know, we don't want people to always be winners because they don't get used to losing. But also, you want these youngsters coming through to have a taste of glory.
Yeah.
But in the quarterfinal yesterday, two 20-year-olds competing. And it kind of shows that perhaps Djokovic has got another couple of years at the top of the game. You know, I think he's 36, but he's still going strong, so why not? But these two are Alcaraz and Rune. They're pushing through and we're going to...
So eventually he will topple.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone has to.
Yeah, absolutely.
In sport, that's how it works. Okay, so talk to me about the BBC Sounds podcast.
Yes, I mean, how fitting, right?
Yeah, I love that.
It is sport related again, but this is Sport's Strangest Crimes on the BBC Sounds app.
Sport's Strangest Crimes.
It's great.
Find the criminal people.
Yeah. And this is about a cyclist called Marco Pantani.
I thought it might involve cycling. A few criminals in there.
Unfortunately so, and that's the topic.
Okay.
So this goes back to the 90s where doping in sport and particularly in cycling is really taking over. And Marco never fails a drugs test. There is someone we all know who had the same circumstances. Yep. Marco, however, believes he is set up. He does serve a 2-week suspension, not a doping ban, but they identify that something was strange with his blood. Nowadays, we would pretty much say that was doping.
Yeah.
But he goes through his career never actually serving a doping ban, and it's after he leaves the circuit, effectively, that he starts really having his troubles in court. And the podcast tells this story beautifully. I would really, really encourage people to listen to it.
If you're into true crime like I am.
True, to be honest, yeah, because the mafia are involved and all sorts.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
How are they involved?
Well, apparently, perhaps he was working for them and...
Is that what the accusation was?
Yeah, and that he basically got on the wrong side of them. And that is why he ended up... And he passed away very young as well. So he passed away in 2004 having only retired a few years earlier, with substances in his hotel room, which he says weren't his, and all sorts. It's a really, really good listen.
And has it become one of those sort of theory things where people think he was bumped off? Is it, do people suggest that, or family think
it's definitely suggested so far? I think I'm on episode 5 so far. It's definitely suggested.
I love it. So is it just that one crime that they're going all the way through?
Yeah, so I think there's about 8 episodes of that one crime. This is the second series.
Wow.
The first series was electric as well. I really, really love this series because I do love true crime.
Yeah, me too. And sport, that's like marrying together your two special interests right there. Exactly. Okay, and let's look. Well, we talked about your guilty pleasures. That just gets us into our final story that you've chosen here. Talk to me about guilty pleasure TV.
Yes. So I did previously want to discuss this and we ran out of time, but Selling Sunset. Have you heard of it? Have you seen
it? I've heard of it. I've not seen it.
Oh, you're missing out, Carrie.
It reminds me of, there was a program back in the day called Sunset Beach.
Oh, right.
Which is probably not dissimilar. But it's one of those, it was so bad you had to watch it.
Is it about real estate?
I can't even remember what it was about. It was just bad. I remember seeing scenes from it, just bad acting. A bit like Dallas, actually.
Oh, right.
It was a bit like Dallas and Dynasty from the 80s. Yes.
Well, this is apparently a real estate documentary, but it's not really. I mean, there are some grand houses in there and grand villas, and they are apparently reality TV stars. They're not actors and actresses.
Okay.
However, it is definitely creative with their makeup.
Is it a little bit like Cribs, where you're?
Yes.
So it's house porn, isn't it? Basically,
that's
you're just seeing lovely houses.
Yes. So it's based over in California. It's the Oppenheim Group, and they basically have a series of different real estate agents, and we follow one office, and this office is full of women who basically wear the most glamorous outfits, even though it's 9 a.m. and it's impossible to walk around. You see them struggling. You know, there's an episode where one of them can't sit down because she said it's not possible to sit down in this outfit.
So it's a completely unreal life. I like that. I do think there's a connection between true crime and that. Because I think it's lives that are so far away from our own existence that we just... It's voyeuristic, kind of like, at least I don't have to live that life, or wow, look at that life.
Yeah, it is that. And so, I mean, they're clearly really good at their jobs. It must be said. And they're very, very intelligent people, because they go to these properties, which are 30 million, etc.
Yeah.
And they're fighting for a commission of 500,000 or a million. And they're...
Do you know what I've never understood, though? Because real estate agents in America, that's a really glamorous job. Whereas if you're an estate agent in London town, it doesn't have the same ring, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Why have we not managed to get that glamour?
I don't know, but it does make me wonder whether I should finish sport, move over to LA and join the Oppenheim Group. Because the storylines between them is phenomenal as well. It's really, really interesting, and you get your favourites and you get your ones which are like, oh, I don't... She's always doing that and kind of thing.
Is this your normal TV viewing?
Well,
because you're not selling yourself very well.
I lead a very stressful life, to be honest. I spend long hours coaching and I look at a lot of scientific literature all day long.
Yeah.
And I remember my wife had this on TV and I was like, what is this nonsense? And within about 7 minutes, absolutely hooked. I was like, let's watch another. And it is about me really being able to unwind, not use my brain, and just think, wow, I want that house. I want that house. I want that house. And can you believe she did that?
I'd love to know if any of our listeners have got those programs, that guilty pleasure telly. And do you watch this? You said you watch this with your wife. So is this like a shared pursuit as well?
Yeah, it completely is. She works a busy office job, and I'm obviously out at all hours. And we basically say, right, no one's allowed to watch Selling Sunset until the others. It's brilliant. It's good. Brings us together. Something to discuss.
I love this. Oh, this sounds like it's relationship goals there.
Yes, absolutely.
So this is where many of us have been going wrong, you see.
Well, I think having a shared hobby or a shared interest makes a difference.
Shared special interest, even better for me. Yeah, absolutely. But I'm going to take tips on that. So what was it called again?
Selling Sunset. I think there's 4 series or 5 series even to catch up on.
So I love it. Anna's just said in my ear, there's six.
Is there six?
Anna, do you watch it? Oh, my gosh. There's another viewer out there. We found the other viewer.
See, there we go. Oh, it's really popular. It's not just us.
You sure?
Yes.
I love this. So, Arj, what have you got coming up for the rest of the summer? What are you up to? Is it a busy time for sport?
It's a really busy time for sport. All the footballers and rugby players, they're preparing for the season now. So we're working with a lot of academy footballers trying to get them ready. We've got our cricketers in full swing, literally. Obviously, we've got the last bit of the Ashes coming up. And we're going to be working on a couple of projects for September. So we're trying to build a bit of a nutrition product for nice. Kind of start to school, you know, for busy people, basically, who can't really commit much time, but they want to feel a little bit better
in
themselves.
If I just eat something good, then that's the start.
Kind of, yes. Kind of that. So we're working on a few products for people, basically.
Arj Tirachelvam, thank you so much for being with me this
Thanks
afternoon.
For having me.
It's been a joy.